Olson sues Delta Corporation on a 3-year supply contract worth roughly $2 million. Month 3, Delta moves to dismiss, arguing the contract is void as indefinite. The judge says no. Delta is convinced that ruling is legally wrong, and it is now staring down a year of discovery on a claim it believes should have been thrown out at the pleading stage. Can Delta take that denial straight to the Court of Appeals? No. Not now, not next month, not until the whole case is over. And here is the part that surprises people. Delta loses nothing by waiting. By the end of this episode, you will know why that denial has to wait, and which rulings do not, and how hard the Court of Appeals will look at each one. 3 moves, in this order. First, the final judgment rule, the default that says you appeal at the end and not in the middle. Second, the narrow exceptions that let you appeal an interlocutory order early. Third, the standards of review, the dial that sets how much deference the trial court gets. Can this be appealed yet? If so, how will it be reviewed? Start with the default, and it is short. You appeal from a final judgment, and generally only then. Under 28 U.S.C. Section 1291, the courts of appeals have jurisdiction over appeals from all final decisions of the district courts. A decision is final when it ends the litigation on the merits and leaves the trial court nothing to do but execute the judgment. Enter the numbers, close the file. Why so strict? Efficiency and respect for the trial court. If every discovery spat could go upstairs the instant it happened, a single case would ride the elevator 100 times. Litigation would never end, and often the party who was furious in month 3 wins the whole case anyway. Then there is nothing left to complain about. Back to Delta. Students worry that the final judgment rule forfeits the right to complain about an unfair ruling made early in a 2-year case. It does not. When the final judgment is entered, every earlier interlocutory order merges into it. On appeal from that judgment, the loser can challenge the denied motion to dismiss, the discovery ruling, the jury instruction, all at once. The rule delays review. It does not destroy it. So what actually counts as final? The judgment entered after a jury verdict or a bench trial? Summary judgment that disposes of the entire case? A dismissal of the whole action? And what is not final? Denial of a motion to dismiss. Denial of summary judgment. Most discovery orders. An order granting a new trial. The test is practical, not formal. Does anything of substance remain for the district court to do on the merits? One more. A dismissal without prejudice, with leave to replead. Final or not final? Usually not final because the plaintiff can simply amend and the case lives on. A dismissal that genuinely ends the case is. Finality also starts a clock, and it is unforgiving. The notice of appeal goes to the district court within 30 days after entry of the judgment. Make that 60 days if the United States or one of its officers or agencies is a party. 3 post-trial motions pause the clock. A renewed motion for judgment as a matter of law under Rule 50B. A motion to amend the findings under Rule 52B. A motion for a new trial or to alter the judgment under Rule 59. While one of those is pending, the 30 days do not start. They run from the order disposing of the last such motion. Miss the deadline, and the right to appeal is generally gone for good. Now the exceptions, because some rulings cannot wait. If a judge orders a company to stop selling its main product tomorrow, telling it that it can appeal in 2 years is no remedy at all. The harm is done now. So learn them as a menu. For each route, note what it lets you appeal and whether the appeal is of right or discretionary. Route 1, injunctions. under 28 U.S.C. Section 1292A1, orders granting, continuing, modifying, refusing, or dissolving an injunction may be appealed immediately, as of right. Nobody's permission required. Because an injunction bites right now, this is the most reliable route on the menu. Route 2. The certified controlling question under Section 1292B. A two-key lock. First, the district judge must certify, in writing, three things. A controlling question of law. Substantial ground for difference of opinion. And that an immediate appeal may materially advance the ultimate termination of the litigation. Then, the Court of Appeals must agree to hear it on an application made within 10 days. Either court can say no. That is why these appeals are uncommon. Third route, the partial final judgment under Rule 54B. Big cases have many claims and many parties. Suppose the court fully resolves one claim while the rest drag on. Rule 54B lets the trial court carve that finished piece out for immediate appeal. On three conditions: multiple claims or parties, complete disposal of at least one of them, and an express determination that there is no just reason for delay. Olson's fraud claim is dismissed in full, while her separate contract claim heads to trial. Can she appeal the fraud dismissal now? Only if the judge makes that express finding. Without it, deciding one of several claims is not yet appealable. Route 4. The collateral order doctrine. Judge-made and deliberately narrow. It treats a small class of orders as effectively final even though the case continues. Three marks, and you need all three. Conclusive, meaning it conclusively determines the disputed question. Separate, meaning it resolves an important issue completely separate from the merits. And unreviewable later, meaning waiting would irreparably lose the right at stake. The classic example is a denial of a government official's claim of qualified immunity, decided as a matter of law. Immunity is a right not to stand trial at all. Make the official wait until after trial, and the protection is already gone. Now, Delta again. The judge orders Delta to hand over internal memos it says are privileged. Same doctrine? No. That harm can be remedied on appeal from the final judgment, so it waits. Two more routes finish the menu, and then a side door. A writ of mandamus under the All Writs Act, 28 U.S.C. Section 1651, is the emergency exit. It is reserved for a clear abuse or usurpation of judicial power, not ordinary legal error you disagree with, and it is rarely granted. Rule 23F lets the Court of Appeals permit an immediate appeal of an order granting or denying class certification. Discretionary, on a petition filed within 14 days, and that deadline will not be equitably extended. Then, contempt, the side door. A non-party ordered to produce documents can defy the order, be held in contempt, and appeal that. You are on appeal. Second question. How closely will that court second-guess what happened below? It does not retry the case. It reads a cold record, and it never saw the witnesses. So it applies different standards to different kinds of rulings. Dials for how much deference the trial court gets. Match the ruling to the standard. That one skill is worth more here than anything else, because the standard very often decides who wins the appeal. De novo first. When the challenge is that the trial court got the law wrong, misread a statute, applied the wrong legal test, the Court of Appeals starts fresh. From scratch, owing the trial judge nothing. Trial judges are not presumed better at law than appellate judges, so de novo governs a dismissal for failure to state a claim, a grant of summary judgment, and a judgment as a matter of law. It also governs interpreting a statute as a matter of law. Now flip to facts. When a judge sits as fact finder in a bench trial and decides what happened, the Court of Appeals will not disturb those findings unless they are clearly erroneous. That means the reviewing judges are left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake was made. Not merely that they might have found the facts differently. Rule 52(a)(6) says exactly this, and tells the reviewing court to give due regard to the trial judge's chance to judge credibility. The trial judge watched the witnesses. The appeals court did not. Jury findings get even more protection. The court asks only whether a reasonable jury, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the winner, could have reached that result. Substantial evidence review, rooted in the Seventh Amendment's re-examination clause. One wrinkle. A court reviewing a Rule 50 judgment as a matter of law decides sufficiency de novo, but still may not re-weigh credibility. Third dial, abuse of discretion. Trial judges make countless calls the rules commit to their on-the-scene judgment, whether to admit a piece of evidence, how to manage discovery, whether to grant a continuance, allow a late amendment, order a new trial, impose sanctions. The Court of Appeals reverses only if the decision was unreasonable, arbitrary, or a clear error of judgment. Delta's trial is over now, and Delta lost. The judge had admitted a damaging internal email over Delta's objection. On appeal, Delta argues that a different judge might reasonably have kept it out. Not enough. One wrinkle here, too. A judge who applies the wrong legal rule while exercising discretion has, by definition, abused it, and that legal error is reviewed de novo. Two filters then sit on top of everything. Plain error is the argument you forgot to make. As a rule, you cannot complain on appeal about something you never raised below. Objections must be preserved. The escape hatch is narrow. The court may, though it need not, notice an obvious error that affected substantial rights. In civil cases, that is rare. Harmless error is the filter over everything else. An appellant who shows a real, preserved error has still not won. Under Rule 61, the court disregards any error that did not affect a party's substantial rights. In plain terms, one that almost certainly did not change the outcome. So the burden has two parts. Show the trial court erred, and show the error mattered. Two refinements, and we are done. A mixed question, applying a legal standard to a particular set of facts, leans one way or the other. Mainly expounding the law, de novo. Mainly sifting the facts, deferential. And on preservation. A purely legal issue raised and lost at summary judgment is preserved without renewal. A sufficiency challenge must be renewed after trial by a Rule 50B motion. A word on authorities, because this episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. Next-gen questions here are recognize and apply. And the governing statute or rule may even be handed to you. The skill is spotting the issue and choosing correctly, not reciting section numbers cold. Nobody will ask you for a case name. If you keep only three, keep these. Section 1291, because finality is where every appealability question starts. Rule 54B, because that express no just reason for delay finding is the condition candidates most often forget. And Rule 52A6, the anchor for the standard candidates most often get wrong. Now the traps the examiners set. 1. Confusing the two questions. Can I appeal yet? Is finality. How will it be reviewed? Is the standard. Answer them in that order. 2. Thinking you lose a mid-case ruling by not appealing it immediately. You don't. It merges into the final judgment and is reviewable then. 3. applying the wrong standard. A judge's fact-finding is clearly erroneous, not de novo. An evidentiary or discovery ruling is abuse of discretion, not de novo. Only questions of law get de novo. 4. Forgetting the harmless error filter. A real, preserved error still loses if it did not affect the outcome. 5. Treating denial of summary judgment as immediately appealable. As a rule, it is not. 6. The deadlines. Section 1292(b) is 10 days to the Court of Appeals. Rule 23F is 14 days. Neither can be equitably extended. And one habit worth building. A fact pattern hands you a plainly discretionary ruling, an evidence call, a discovery limit, and asks whether the Court of Appeals will reverse. The answer is almost always only if there was an abuse of discretion. A deliberately high bar. Time for the quick check. And this one comes straight from the BARGO question bank. After a bench trial, the only issue left for appeal is whether the trial judge correctly interpreted a key term in a federal statute. The question turns entirely on the statute's text. Nobody disputes what anyone actually did. The losing party, Harwood Manufacturing, says the judge read the term too broadly and that the error decided the case. How will the Court of Appeals review that interpretation? Option 1. Clearly erroneous, because the interpretation was made by the trial judge after a bench trial. Option 2. De novo, because the meaning of a statute is a question of law for the court. Option 3. Substantial evidence, because the ruling followed a full evidentiary bench trial. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 2. Interpreting a statute is a quintessential question of law. So the Court of Appeals reviews it de novo, with no deference, even though the interpretation emerged from a bench trial. The setting does not change the character of the question. Statutory meaning has a single correct legal answer, and appellate judges decide it independently. Option 1 is the classic trap. Clearly erroneous applies to a bench trial judge's findings of fact, who did what and whom to believe, never to legal conclusions. Option 3 confuses this with review of a jury's factual findings. Substantial evidence protects fact findings, not legal rulings. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each with every option explained like that. 5 things to take away. 1. You appeal from a final judgment under Section 1291, a ruling that ends the case and leaves only execution. The notice goes in within 30 days or 60 days if the United States is a party. 2. Nothing is lost by waiting, because interlocutory orders merge into the final judgment. 3. The early exits are a short menu. Injunctions under Section 1292(a)(1) of right. A certified controlling question under Section 1292(b), discretionary. A Rule 54(b) partial judgment with the express finding. A collateral order that is conclusive, separate, and unreviewable later. Class certification under Rule 23F. And mandamus, for a clear usurpation of power. 4. Classify the ruling and the standard follows. Pure law, de novo. A judge's fact-finding, clearly erroneous. A jury's fact-finding, reasonable jury. A discretionary call, abuse of discretion. An unpreserved point, plain error, if anything. 5. Even then, ask whether the error affected substantial rights, because a harmless error is not a ground for reversal. Which brings us back to Delta, still furious about a denied motion to dismiss. It waited, it lost at trial, and then it put every one of those rulings in front of the Court of Appeals at once. Nothing was forfeited. that is the last stop in civil procedure. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.